chapter of the book of Leviticus. And I think tonight that I would like to just read through it with you and then make comments and answer any questions. So let us read together. I'll read it as you follow along from Leviticus chapter 16. The Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, who died when they approached the Lord. The Lord said to Moses, "Tell your brother Aaron not to come whenever he chooses into the most holy place behind the curtain, in front of the atonement cover on the ark, or else he will die, because I appear in the cloud over the atonement cover." This is how Aaron is to enter the sanctuary area: with a young bull for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. He is to put on the sacred linen tunic with linen undergarments next to his body. He is to tie the linen sash around him and put on the linen turban. These are sacred garments, so he must bathe himself with water before he puts them on. From the Israelite community, he is to take two male goats for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. Aaron is to offer the bull for his own sin offering to make atonement for himself and his household. Then he is to take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the entrance to the tent of meeting. He is to cast lots for the two goats, one for the Lord and the other for Azazel. I'm giving a literal translation. Aaron shall bring the goat whose lot falls to the Lord and sacrifice it for a sin offering. But the goat chosen by lot as the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to be used for making atonement by sending it into the desert for Azazel. Aaron shall bring the bull for his own sin offering to make atonement for himself and his household. And he is to slaughter the bull for his own sin offering. He is to take the censer full of burning coals from the altar before the Lord, and two handfuls of finely ground fragrant incense, and take them behind the curtain. He is to put the incense on the fire before the Lord, and the smoke of the incense will conceal the atonement cover above the testimony, so that he will not die. He is to take some of the bull's blood and with his finger sprinkle it on the front of the atonement cover. Then he shall sprinkle some of it with his finger seven times before the atonement cover. He shall then slaughter the goat for the sin offering for the people, and take its blood behind the curtain and do with it as he did with the bull's blood. He shall sprinkle it on the atonement cover and in front of it. In this way he will make atonement for the most holy place because of the uncleanness and rebellion of the Israelites, whatever their sins have been. He is to do the same for the tent of meeting, which is among them in the midst of their uncleanness. No one is to be in the tent of meeting from the time Aaron goes in to make atonement in the most holy place until he comes out, having made atonement for himself, his household, and the whole community of Israel. Then he shall come out to the altar that is before the Lord and make atonement for it. He shall take some of the bull's blood and some of the goat's blood and put it on all the horns of the altar. He shall sprinkle some of the blood on it with his finger seven times to cleanse it and to consecrate it from the uncleanness of the Israelites. When Aaron has finished making atonement for the most holy place, the tent of meeting and the altar, he shall bring forward the live goat. He is to lay both hands on the head of the live goat and confess over it all the wickedness and rebellion of the Israelites, all their sins, and put them on the goat's head. He shall send the goat away into the desert in the care of a man appointed for the task, the goat will carry on itself all their sins to a solitary place, and the man shall release it in the desert. Then Aaron is to go into the tent of meeting and take off the linen garments he put on before he entered the most holy place, and he is to leave them there. He shall bathe himself with water in a holy place and put on his regular garments. Then he shall come out and sacrifice the burnt offering for himself and the burnt offering for the people to make atonement for himself and for the people. He shall also burn the fat of the sin offering on the altar. The man who releases the goat as a scapegoat must wash his clothes and bathe himself with water. Afterward, he may come into the camp. The bull and the goat for the sin offering, whose blood was brought into the most holy place to make atonement, must be taken outside the camp. Their hides, flesh, and offal are to be burned up. The man who burns them must wash his clothes and bathe himself with water. Afterwards, he may come into the camp. This is to be a lasting ordinance for you. On the 10th day of the 7th month, you must deny yourselves or afflict yourselves and do not do any work, whether native-born or an alien living among you, because on this day atonement will be made for you to cleanse you. Then before the Lord you will be clean from all your sins. It is the Sabbath of rest, and you must deny yourselves. It is a lasting ordinance. The priest who is anointed and ordained to succeed his father as high priest is to make atonement. He is to put on the sacred linen garments and make atonement for the most holy place, for the tent of meeting, and the altar, and for the priest, and all the people of the community. This is to be a lasting ordinance for you. Atonement is to be made once a year for all the sins of the Israelites. And it was done as the Lord commanded Moses. We have now reached what I would call a turning point in the ceremonial ritual under Moses. And I think it might help if we pause for a moment and review what we have seen. The ceremonial prescription began, you remember, with a series of five sacrifices. And I believe these five sacrifices answer the question, what shall I render to the Lord? What shall my offering be? In other words, the law begins in terms of setting forth what is needed by the sinner. The second thing it sets forth is the answer to this question, who shall ascend unto the hill of the Lord? And the answer is, he that has clean hands and a pure heart. And so in the second series, it sets forth a ritual of cleansing, robing, and consecration by which a great high priest is qualified to ascend unto the Lord. The third thing that we have in the ceremonial law is the information that it is not enough to have a proper way of approach to God through these sacrifices, not even enough to have a person qualified to make that sacrifice on behalf of the Lord's people. It is also necessary that there be a people made ready to receive it. And so the ceremonial law dealt with a wide variety of things which identified the members of the congregation of Israel either as clean or unclean. Now you'll remember that these regulations had to do with leprosy, death, childbirth, eating, and the reproductive system. And to us that might seem quaint, strange, but they had a high and holy purpose. The purpose was to instill within the people of God a true sense of the pervasiveness of the effects of sin in this world and the things that disqualify a person from entering the presence of God. Now, some of those things could not possibly be avoided, but that was all the more useful in the days of the childhood of the church, as God, through the simple ceremonial ABC lessons, what they're called in effect in the New Testament, the rudimentary ordinances, they instilled within the people of God a constant conscience about being clean in order to be able to approach the Lord. It was, in other words, educating them as respect of conscience before God. And the ceremonial commandments concerning this uncleanness had the great effect of driving this home, so that there was a constant desire and concern on the part of God's people to be qualified to take advantage of this ceremonial atonement by which they could approach God. I believe that underneath the shadowy types and symbols was embedded something higher. And one of the things I believe that had to be more and more felt by the people of God, maybe they couldn't articulate it always in words, but they felt it, and that was the holiness of God. Another thing that they felt was the distance between them and God, because he was inaccessible to them. He was in the Holy of Holies, in the pillar of cloud and fire, and nobody could go in there except the high priest, and only he once a year. And so, of course, they realized that it was no small thing to get right with this great God who claimed to be the creator and ruler of the world. Well, now let us look then at what I regard as the heart of the book of Leviticus in this 16th chapter, because here we have the moment in the life of Israel when once a year there actually was a representative who went on their behalf right into the presence of the living God. Now, the first thing that we see here is that the lesson of the death of Nadab and Abihu, and if you would just turn quickly back to Leviticus chapter 10, I'll read you once again the relevant verses. It's right at the beginning. Aaron's sons Nadab and Abihu offered unauthorized fire before the Lord. And the NIV says, contrary to his command. That's not a good translation. It doesn't say that in the Hebrew. What it says is, which he did not command. And there is a difference. That's verse 1 of chapter 10. The last few words should be translated, which he did not command. That was what was wrong with it. Not something that was contrary to what he did command, but it was unauthorized. It was not something he commanded. Well, now, the Lord reminds Aaron of that and then says to him, through Moses, you are not to come whenever you choose into the most holy place, behind the curtain, in front of the atonement cover on the ark, or you'll die, because I appear in the cloud over the atonement cover. Now, what that means is that the atonement cover is the NIV translation of the Ark of the Covenant, and the mercy seat was the cover of that ark, over which arched the wings of the cherubim. And God was manifest in that period of history in a pillar of cloud and fire that sat right there between the cherubim. And so the place of atonement, which really is the kafer, the cover of that Ark of the Covenant is the place where the blood had to be sprinkled. I don't really think that we gain by translating that by atonement cover, but the meaning is it's the covering of the Ark of the Covenant, and it was the place where the blood had to be sprinkled. But the thing that made it awesome and even dangerous to enter there is that God, the living God, the one true and living God, had chosen to manifest His presence in a supernatural way at that place. Now, what was in that ark? The Ten Commandments, carved on stone. So what you have is God, His holy law, and He's looking down upon that holy law. And between the all-seeing eye of God and His perfect law as inscribed in the Ten Commandments was the mercy seat. And it was only when the blood of atonement was sprinkled on the mercy seat that the eyes of God could say that His justice, which the law demands, was satisfied. All right, there follows then a series of requirements that had to be carried out on that one day of the year, which was the 10th day of the 7th month. And that was, first of all, that Aaron had to do a ritual to make himself worthy to officiate for the people. And he had to have a young bull for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. And he had to, first of all, put on a different kind of garment. Now, if you look in your Bible, in Exodus chapter 28, you'll get the important point that is being made here. In Exodus chapter 28, you have the account that God gave to Moses on Mount Sinai, his plan and requirements and prescriptions and directions for the making of the garments that Aaron was to wear. Now notice what it says in chapter 28, verse 2. Make sacred garments for your brother Aaron to give him dignity and honor. And what were some of the things that he wore? Well, look at verse 6. Make the ephod of gold, blue, purple, scarlet yarn, the work of a skilled craftsman. Verse 9, take two onyx stones and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel. Then comes in verse 15, the breastplate. And verse 22, make braided chains of pure gold like rope. And you go on down to verse 31, make the robe of the ephod entirely of blue cloth. And verse 36, make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it a seal holy to the Lord. Well, my goodness, this man was really dressed in the richest, most beautiful and glorious garments that you can imagine. And that's exactly what it says in verse 40. Make tunics, sashes, and headbands for Aaron's sons to give them dignity and honor. And then he says, consecrate them so they may serve me as priests. So everything that Aaron wore for the rest of his official work as high priest was in robes of glory. But not on this occasion. No. On this occasion, he takes all those glorious garments with gold and linen, this material of rich tapestry and so on, and this head thing with gold on it. He takes all that off and he puts on just linen. A linen tunic with linen undergarments. And he ties a linen sash around him and puts on a linen turban. Absolutely no glory or decoration of any kind. He bathes himself with water before he puts them on, and now he is ready to minister on the annual Day of Atonement. Well, first of all then, he takes two male goats for a sin offering, and a ram for a burnt offering, for the Israelite community. He's already, and I think that's why it's repeated in verse 6, he's already sacrificed, however, a bull for his own sin and for his household. And when he has done that, then he is to take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the entrance of the tent of meeting. Now, some of you may remember my sermon some months back on one for Azazel. And you will remember that I argued that Azazel must be a proper name, and the reason I say that is because of the parallelism in the Hebrew text between the two phrases, one for the Lord and one for, and then the Hebrew word is Azazel. And I believe that it has to be understood as representing a person. Now, who that person is, or that being, may be debatable, and there is a debate about the meaning of the word Azazel. My own conclusion is that it really does represent Satan. And so one of these goats is sacrificed, the other one is sent into the wilderness, being led out there and abandoned by someone chosen out of the nation to do it. But the two together are one offering. And it seems to me that what it means is that the blood of atonement on the one hand means death is required, and by that blood, that precious blood which is shed, because it is not sin blood but righteous blood, God's requirement of righteousness is met. But on the other side, the sending of that goat away into the wilderness represents the abandonment of the wicked, the one who dies to the power of the evil one. And you will well imagine what that would be like for a scapegoat out in the wilderness. It would certainly be torn by wild beasts and the like. And you will remember that it was in a similar context the Spirit drove Jesus Christ out in the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And all the way through the New Testament, the desolate wasteland desert type of place is the place associated with the habitation of demons and the devil. Whatever we may think of that with our modern minds, then, I am quite persuaded that that is the heart of this idea. The death of the substitute involves, on the one hand, the offering up to God of righteous blood, but also the abandoning of that representative to the power of the evil one. All right, now Aaron brings the bull for his own sin and for his own household, and he slaughters it, and he takes the censer with burning coals from the altar before the Lord, and two handfuls of finely ground fragrant incense, and takes them now finally behind the curtain. That means into the most holy place. So the moment has arrived when he actually goes in there. Well, why does he have to have a cloud of incense? He has to have a cloud of incense to hide him or obscure him from the all-seeing eyes of God. If he doesn't have that cloud of incense between him and God, he's in danger of dying. And so he goes in there with these hot coals, and he puts the incense down, and a big cloud comes up, almost obscuring the Ark of the Covenant. That way, he can safely go in there, and he can sprinkle that blood and then leave without losing his own life. Obviously intended to heighten and increase the sense of awe in the presence of the Most Holy One of Israel. Now he is to take some of the bull's blood, verse 14, and with his finger sprinkle it on the front of the atonement cover, and then sprinkle some of it with his finger seven times before the atonement cover, or the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. The seven times sprinkling, of course, represents perfection. This number seven is often used that way in the Bible. And then he goes out. Immediately he slaughters the goat for the sin offering for the people, and takes its blood and does with it as he did with the bull's blood. To my mind, that means that the sacrifice of the bull and the sacrifice of the two goats is really one sacrifice. It's only one sacrifice. That's why the same identical thing is repeated. Well, you say, if it's only one sacrifice, why then three animals? Well, because you couldn't do all these things with one. That's why. And you have to do all these things to point out the different elements that God is requiring. So you have to have two goats, one to die and one to go out to the devil, in order to fully symbolize the work of Christ. They are united with the blood of this bull to show that this really is one great sacrifice. Now, what is this annual atonement for? Well, look at verse 16. In this way, he will make atonement for the most holy place because of the uncleanness and rebellion of the Israelites, whatever their sins have been. Now, that means, doesn't it, that all of the other sacrifices are plainly seen to be inadequate? They were going on all the time, every day, outside at the altar. God is as much as saying to his Old Testament people, those sacrifices really don't do the job, friends. It's just not enough. So we're going to have an annual day of atonement when the high priest actually comes right in here into my presence and fixes everything up with this special annual atonement. It's an eloquent way, in other words, of pointing to the inadequacy of the shedding of the blood of bulls and goats. You say, well, yes, but here it is, the blood of bulls and goats again. True. But you know, it's an interesting fact that if you read the rest of the Bible, the rest of the Old Testament, never do we have any recorded instance that this was ever done. Now, I don't say it never was done, but it's never mentioned that it was done. Now, we do have specific mention of Passover feasts in the time of Hezekiah and Nehemiah. But there is no mention that this ever was actually done. Now, I don't know if it was or not, but the fact that it is not recorded as having been done in the historical account of Old Testament Israel would only add to its significance, because it is clearly a type of the work that Christ had to do when he came to put all things right. Now in verse 18, he comes out to the altar and makes atonement for it. You can see, in other words, that even the altar, even the apparatus of the regular sacrifices had to be more or less forgiven. It was recognized to be inadequate, and this is how that was accomplished. And here again, he sprinkles on that altar out in front the same way that he did on the mercy seat within. Now, to my mind, that also unites those two things. And I think the union between the mercy seat inside of the holy place and the altar outside is just exactly the same as the union between the death of Christ on the cross and the Lord's Supper. It's the death of Christ on the cross, once and for all, that really saves us. The efficacy of the Lord's Supper is based on its connection with that. Well, it's exactly the same as between the annual Day of Atonement under the Old Testament ceremonial law and the daily sacrifices at the altar. It was the, you might call it this, it was the merit of the annual Day of Atonement that sanctified and gave efficacy to the daily sacrifice outside at the altar. When Aaron has finished, verse 20, making atonement in the most holy place of the tent of meeting and the altar, he shall bring forward the live goat He is to lay both hands on the head of the live goat and confess over it all the wickedness and rebellion of the Israelites, all their sins, and put them on the goat's head. You can clearly see then that this is intended to be a decisive once-for-all package. The other daily sacrifices or weekly sacrifices, they just don't wrap it all up and get rid of it all. This one does. He shall then send the goat away into the desert in the care of a man appointed for the task. The goat will carry on itself all their sins to a solitary place, and the man shall release it in the desert. Now, when all of that is done, and that clearly shows the unity of it, meaning that this Azazel business, the two goat business, and the two altar business is really all one, and you have to see it as one, when all that is finished, then Aaron takes off the linen garment and he comes out of the most holy place and he bathes himself with water and puts on his regular garments. In other words, his garments now of beauty and glory. Then he shall come out and sacrifice the burnt offering for himself and the burnt offering for the people to make atonement for himself and for the people. He shall also burn the fat of the sin offering on the altar. In other words, because he has done the one, now he can come out and do the other. The man who releases the goat as a scapegoat must wash his clothes and bathe himself with water. Afterward, he may come into the camp, the bull and the goat, for the sin offering, whose blood was brought into the most holy place to make atonement, must be taken outside the camp. Their hide, flesh, and offal are to be burned. The man who burns them must wash his clothes and bathe himself with water. Afterward, he may come into the camp. This is to be a lasting ordinance. Well, now, I don't think it stretches one's imagination at all to see exactly what this means. Christ Jesus came and is the great high priest of God. But I ask you, was he clothed in garments of beauty and glory? Well, right away you say, no, Pastor, he was humiliated. He was born in a low condition, as our catechism says, born under the law. He was despised and rejected of men. Exactly what the linen clothing symbolized on that day, humility. The very reverse of glory and beauty and all that. So Christ comes down here and he executes the office of a priest, as our catechism says, by his once offering up of himself a sacrifice to satisfy divine justice and reconcile us to God. And then, having done that, God raised him from the dead, highly exalted him, and now, as our high priest, he ever lived to make intercession for him. Now he is arrayed in the garments of glory. And now, in the garments of glory, he administers the efficacy of his own saving work on the cross through the sacraments of the new covenant, such as the Lord's Supper. And that, I believe, is exactly what all of this pointed to and was intended to convey and mean. Now, let's take a look at the last section there. It is a Sabbath of rest, and you must deny yourselves. Anybody have the King James? I believe that is afflict yourself. In the... afflict yourself. It really is the one place in the Old Testament, and the only place I know of, that at least suggests fasting. That was the kind of response and attitude and feeling the Lord wanted his people to have. This was to be a day of rest. They laid aside everything else. They were to deny themselves, and they were even to afflict themselves, because they were entering into, you might say, the consciousness of what this was all about. And I believe that that is exactly what we experience in a different way, to be sure, but we experience and ought to experience when we come to the Lord's table. We examine ourselves and we realize that we are unworthy and sinful before God, and that our only hope is in the work that He has done on our behalf. And it's only because He went into the very presence of God to present His precious blood, and because He was abandoned to the devil. Christ says something about that. The evil one comes, and he will find nothing in me. And we know that Christ, He spoke of this as the hour of the power of darkness and the light. We know that Christ was like that goat abandoned out there in the wilderness to the wild beast, as He was abandoned to the dark kingdom of the devil in His death on the cross. And we realize this, and because of it, we are sobered and we reflect upon it, but then we also rejoice in the efficacy of it, because we realize that it is an atonement that really does forever banish the guilt and punishment of our sins from us. Well, I believe that's the meaning of this part of the ceremonial law. I think of all the Old Testament, there is no clearer presentation of the gospel than in Leviticus chapter 16, and no deeper insight into what it was all about than chapter 16 of the book of Leviticus. What a pity it would be if we as the people of God didn't take the time to look at that tremendous lesson. And everything else that we've looked at really leads up to this awesome and decisive event. You can well imagine how those people felt when that priest went in there and came back out alive. Well, that's exactly what we feel a thousand times over with our Lord Jesus Christ, who, even though He did offer Himself up, yet was raised up from the dead to live forever and to make intercession for us. Is there any questions from anyone on this part of the book of Leviticus? Yes, that's good. That is correct. That may have a it's an aspect of it, I would suppose. Certainly the book of Hebrews emphasizes that theme greatly. I don't know of any text that specifically emphasizes the outside the camp idea as the decisive witness of its ineffectiveness, but you can see that it is, and I think this does help you to see it. But you see, their blood was brought into the most holy place, but it's the rest, the hides and the flesh, that's taken outside and burned. So don't forget that. It would have had no efficacy at all if the blood hadn't gone inside the holy place. So I wouldn't press that too far, but there is significance in that, because it is pointed out in the book of Hebrews. All right, anyone else? Okay. Now, are there any prayer suggestions for tonight? I have on my list foreign mission work of our church, which is right now hurting a bit because of the decline of the U.S. dollar, and it declined again today further. So we want to remember them. It really hurts when the dollar turns into fewer dollars overseas. Any special needs of anyone?